All right, shall we?
Absolutely.
Let's go.
What's with this city that we endlessly dissect it, glorify it, wonder how exactly we fit into it? It's such a strange narcissistic thing to do, but it's kind of irresistible too. So the other day I went on a walk with Becky Cooper, the author of a new book, Mapping Manhattan, and Adam Gopnik of The New Yorker, who wrote the introduction. In a sense, Mapping Manhattan is a crowdsourcing project. Becky handed out blank maps of Manhattan to regular New Yorkers, celebrities like Yoko Ono, people on Tumblr, asking them all to fill in their memories, associations, and doodles. But it was also a great excuse to walk and talk about our favorite town. We met at Madison Square Park on 23rd Street and headed down Broadway.
I'm always lost. And so I think maps for me have always been this way of storytelling. I love using maps as a medium for the map maker to tell a story of themselves. With a lot of the people who are filling out these maps, I was asking them to map where their home is, and in doing so, they mapped who they are.
Adam, you write that cities, when we see them, seem first like chaos and have to be revealed to us as charts before we know them as our own. Which, for me, I remember that first day I was in New York City. It's incredible and overwhelming, overpowering, and it seems to be really, I guess, true what you say.
You know, I had two first days in New York. One when I was about 5 years old, when we went for the opening of the Guggenheim, which dates me, right? I was so overwhelmed by the sheer density and press and energy and plurality of New York that I ended up in my great aunt Hannah's apartment on Riverside Drive, looking out at the Palisades and the little lights twinkling on the Palisades and thinking, oh, that's where New York is. It's over there. Because I couldn't internalize it. I couldn't accept that I was actually in it. It always had to be someplace else.
Right, right.
And I felt the same way when I came back to New York as a semi-grown-up in one day in August of 1978, and I just felt this overwhelming rush. And then you begin this work of trying to carve from this extremely resistant material a shape of your own, leaving your own impress in it. And I suppose that that's simply true of all cities, that would be true if you were a kid coming off the farm into Shanghai. It seems more true of New York, I think, than anywhere else. You know, some people say the smell of a skunk is not the worst smell there is, it just is the most smell there is. And New York, I don't think it's the best city there is, but it's the most city there is. It has the most essential features of a city, kind of compressed, Manhattan especially, into the smallest compass.
Well, something here is happening, Union Square.
I think part of this project was born out of this desire to capture Manhattan that seems so elusive, where it's both the place where you get your bagel and you go to Duane Reade and you do all these sort of daily things, but it's also this place that's off in the distance.
But at the same time, I guess one thing that is fixed, I mean, there's no edges bleeding off into the suburbs. Basically, I guess the geography is very tangible and you don't second guess what the shape of the city is, do you?
So you're working against fixed parameters.
And do you think that makes the geography, I guess, more identifiable and people relate to it more?
Yeah, I think so. I absolutely think so. I think that, can we sit down for a second? And we'll, the grid plan that makes New York so distinct is one that, in a certain sense, cancels personality. That's one of the things it seems to do. Whereas Paris and London are both, in a certain sense, organic cities. They've grown up over a long period of time. And the irrationality of their structure is a reflection of that long history that's taken place. That's why you need to take 2 years to learn how to become a taxi driver in London, because there is no rationality to the plan. New York has a super impersonal plan, and yet it takes on a private impress. That corner on that absolutely rectilinear grid of 23rd and Broadway becomes your corner.
Right. I mean, I feel like its grid pattern actually invites personality because of how nonspecific it is. Because the second you come here, you feel like you own a part of it because you aren't lost. There isn't this sort of exclusivity of the person who's grown up here.
One of the great maps in here really is this woman who, her map starts in the dorms around NYU. And she just writes, "This is where I fell in love with him, up to Midtown. This is where we stayed together," which trails up to this very specific point in Central Park. "This is where we said goodbye," and a final path of an airplane just going straight north, and now he's gone.
You could see it as mapping a void or mapping loss, but I see it as mapping a celebration of what they had had.
You're young, Becky. You see aspiration instead of disappointment.
All the potential.
And loss.
A guy who leaves you is the potential for a guy who can come in and replace
or just an acknowledgement of the beauty of a feeling that has existed.
This is so. We're walking by the Strand Bookstore, the great secondhand and I guess now new as well bookstore, which is a big space on my own private map of Manhattan. You know, it's funny when you get to a certain point in your New York experience and you do sort of register the losses more keenly than the possibilities. I can remember the kind of dazzling feeling that we would get when I first came to New York, right? And you'd sort of master a new neighborhood that had always seemed daunting in some way, whether it was the Lower East Side or Little Italy or the East Village. And nowadays, what you register, at least in Manhattan, more is, oh, look, the Lower East Side now looks exactly like Little Italy, which looks exactly like every other place in town. I think the homogenization of Manhattan is real and is reflected in lots of ways on these in these maps.
Do you think that came out, Becky, and with the people that you spoke to? Did they kind of reflect this sense of homogenization or a sense of loss of their neighborhoods as they understood it?
I'm particularly reminded of this older man wearing orthopedic shoes pushing this cart on maybe 110th Street in the Upper West Side. And he said that he'd lived here his whole life and this was all he knew. And yet he was surrounded by, you know, there was a Whole Foods that was opening up and there was an American Apparel. And he went on for a while about how even this place, that's all he knew, was still changing in a way that he was becoming a stranger to the only place that he's ever known.
Where are we now? We are now at East 8th.
We're in East 8th Street, approaching NYU, the ever-growing empire of NYU. We're headed towards Houston, so we'll be...
We ended our walk at Broadway and Houston at the edge of Soho. Now, if I were to map the city, I'd make a mark for my first job just a couple blocks away. The one I wasn't very good at and where I felt so unloved and underpaid. And then maybe a little arrow to a few blocks over and 15 years later. Current job much happier, although I could use a raise. This is Micropolis. I'm Arun Vanagopal at WNYC.
And I was saying, yeah, Soho, that means south of the house. And she's like, oh my God, how do you know all these things? I was like, well, you know, I'm a New Yorker, I guess.
That's the moment we all dream of, right? As we stand in the corner of Broadway House, the moment we say, I'm a New Yorker, right? And it's earned rather than given.